federal waivers allowing all schools to participate in universal free school meal programs came to an end on June 30th. The waivers, which gave free meals to any K-12 student in a participating school during summer and the academic year, began as an emergency response to COVID-19. Advocates for the program are fighting for legislation to keep it going, especially as some families report they're left with uncertainty about the best way to manage finances and food as the school year approaches. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a parent who benefited from these federal waivers? Did your school use this program to say, hey, anybody who wants a meal gets a meal, no need to provide proof of low income? Do you want it to continue, or do you think it was an emergency measure and the main emergency has passed? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Erin Gretzinger is a reporting intern for Wisconsin Watch. She recently co-wrote an article with Maddie Bergstrom for Wisconsin Watch on universal school meals. Erin, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what's going to look different for parents and kids in this fall's back to school when it comes to the availability of these lunches?
Right. So all Wisconsin schools operating federal food service programs offered free meals through the seamless summer option through the 2021-2022 school year. And many schools in the 2020-2021 school year also offered free meals through a federal waiver. So many schools in Wisconsin for the first time in 2 years won't have that option since that waiver has now expired and legislative efforts to replace or reinstate it have stalled. This is going to have a really big impact on students, families, and schools themselves. We know that keeping kids fed has an impact on their performance in school. School meals are linked to more children eating at school, kids being less likely to skip breakfast, and also improvement in school attendance. And additionally, without the application process last fall, families didn't have to apply for free school meals, and it was treated like anything else, a part of the school day, which helped alleviate stigma. And free meals allowed families typically on the fringe of qualifying for meals or otherwise financially struggling families to receive these meals. And we saw in Wisconsin that this contributed to a boost in participation in school meals, and particularly in breakfast, which is a huge feat for the state, since we're normally one of the worst ranking states in terms of breakfast participation. And like I said, schools also benefited from universal free meals since it decreased some administrative burdens in administering the meals, since students got them like anything else a part of the school day. So overall, there's going to be a lot of changes without that this fall, since families will once again have to qualify, and we'll see some of those benefits of the school meal experiment fade away.
And your article highlights one Wisconsin woman's story about her experience with food insecurity after being furloughed, a common experience at the outset of COVID. Can you share some of her story?
Yeah, absolutely. So the family that we feature in the story is from Waukesha, which was actually the only school district in Wisconsin to initially opt out of the free meals program in the 2021-2022 school year. The family that we featured in the story, they had faced layoffs and income shocks, a situation we know that many people in Wisconsin went through, especially at the start of the pandemic. And this shows in food insecurity numbers themselves. Feeding America's numbers from Wisconsin show that 40% of people who use food pantries during the pandemic were using them for the first time. So the situation the Goodmans were facing, the family we highlighted, was something we can see was a common theme throughout Wisconsin and the country. So the Goodmans, they used any assistance they could use, including free school meals. And what they found is that lunch money really added up to make a big difference. And this family, particularly without the free meal program this fall, they're worried about paying for food amid record high inflation. And other families will be grappling with that as well across Wisconsin.
Talking to Erin Gretzinger with Wisconsin Watch, looking at changes in school nutrition programs. Many schools that were able to provide free school meals to all students without proof of low income. That program's expired, so it'll look different in many schools this fall. You can join in at 800-642-1234, maybe with your experiences. Whether you work at a school, you send your kids to school, you go to school as a student yourself. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234. Erin, in your reporting, what have you heard from Wisconsin schools with this change looming next month?
Yeah, absolutely. So we heard just from talking to the Department of Public Instruction that they received a lot of reports from schools about how free meals really made a difference in their ability to reach students because it eased this administrative process. Schools didn't have to keep track of which students had money in their account or if they qualified for free and reduced meals. It also addressed the issue of school meal debt, and an estimated 3/4 of schools across the country report school meal debt, which cuts into their own budgets and abilities to provide food service programs. Another big thing we heard from schools was that this curbed a practice known as lunch shaming. And one way in which this manifests is how that schools give students alternative meals, such as cheese sandwiches, when the money in their school meal account runs out. And this can subject students to stigma because if you see a kid in the lunch line with a cheese sandwich, it immediately points them out as not being able to afford that school meal. So we see the support from schools also manifesting in the Healthy School Meals for All campaign, which was launched in coordination with legislation proposed in Wisconsin last fall that never made it out of committee, but would have provided additional state reimbursements in addition to federal reimbursements. So to incentivize schools in Wisconsin to provide free meals. And this coalition has several school districts signed on, as well as 50 supporters overall.
Now, you mentioned there was some controversy in the Waukesha School District when they didn't want to pick this up. There has been opposition to this, saying, too much federal control over these programs. And of course, now that students are in school, the at-home learning has ended, the need for this program isn't there. Can you talk about the other side of this a little bit, why some people are ready to see this expire?
Yeah, I think Waukesha is a really interesting case, and it actually became kind of the epicenter of this debate over universal free meals in the nation. Like I said, Waukesha was the only district in Wisconsin to initially opt out of the free meal program in 2021-2022 school year. And this decision received national attention after it was picked up by the Washington Post. One school board member we talked to said he received over 500 emails over the incident. And it led to, rallies in the community, and it received media inquiries from all over the world, including Moscow. And just in general, the opposition surrounding this is kind of, as you alluded to, that potentially this was a federal emergency provision. We also heard concerns specifically from school members that, or school board members, when this became a heated debate, that this was a program that would be used to feed all children, even those who didn't need the free meal program. Like, for example, if you could afford to pay for free meals, why would you accept the free meals? And that was one point of debate. And then another issue too is just how this became politicized in Waukesha. And there was also comparisons to other debates about CRT and other issues that were predominant on school boards across the country during the pandemic.
And Aaron, what are you watching for next on this school meal story?
Yeah, so like I said, in the fall, schools will once again be subject to free and reduced lunch applications. So it'll be a process for schools to get those applications back out to families, to be alerting them of this change, as this has been the system for 2 years. So seeing how that rollout goes out and making sure that families understand the application process more generally. As I mentioned earlier, there is legislation in Wisconsin called the Healthy School Meals for All Act, which was authored by 30 Democrats in the Wisconsin legislature. And that seems to still be on the table and getting some momentum potentially into this fall. So keeping an eye on that bill and seeing if free meals does become a reality in Wisconsin.
Aaron, thanks for joining us today.
Yes, thanks for having me.
That was Aaron Gretzinger, reporting intern at Wisconsin Watch, with us today to talk about her reporting on the end of a universal free school meal program that's federally funded and how it'll affect Wisconsin. Coming up, we'll talk to a researcher who looks at the impact of providing meals in schools, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's a good idea to offer free meals to all students, or should it be need-based? Should it be something that's available to every district or just ones with a lot of need? What questions do you have about the impact of all this? What experiences do you have to share? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. As we just heard, federal waivers that allowed universal free school meals for all students are coming to an end. Our next guest has researched the impact of expanded school nutrition programs on learning and discipline in schools. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want free meals available in more schools to all students, or should it just be need-based as it was in many places before the pandemic? Has this all affected your life one way or another? You're a student at school, you're a parent of said student, you're a teacher, a school staffer. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Krista Ruffini is an assistant professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy, researching how government policies affect the labor market, education, and health outcomes. Krista, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Well, this change hasn't happened yet, so it's maybe hard to study the impact, but you've done some before and after studies looking at the impact of providing meals to all students. What kind of things have you learned from the past?
Yeah, that's right. So I've done a whole host of research that has evaluated an earlier form of school-wide free meals called the community eligibility provision. So under the community eligibility provision, schools and districts in which there's already a large share of students that are receiving free meals because they're eligible to receive other forms of income assistance, these schools and districts can just offer school-wide free meals to all of the students. And so there's a lot of variation in when schools and districts decided to start this program. Part of this is due to the federal legislation and when states were eligible. And then as the program has developed, more and more states schools and districts have opted in. And so I've looked at the effect of this program on academic achievement, on student discipline, and on the use of community food resources, namely food banks. And what I find is really some meaningful benefits across the board. So we see improvements in math performance, especially for Hispanic and white students. I see reductions in out-of-school suspensions, especially for younger white male students. And there's also reductions in food bank usage. And importantly, all of these benefits are going to be concentrated in the schools and districts in which there weren't that many kids that were receiving free meals before the universal provision became an option.
And something I should clarify for my own benefit, because I kind of, my head's spinning a little bit, with the changes, even after this universal thing goes away, that community program where schools with high levels of students who are eligible for free and reduced lunches can provide lunches to everybody, they, correct me if I'm wrong, still get to keep doing that, right?
Yeah, 100% correct. So there's, even though the federal kind of universal waiver of universal meals has expired, there's still a bunch of options that schools and districts have for those areas that are interested in continuing some form of universal school meals. So community eligibility provision is one. Provision two is another, but importantly, all of these pre-existing programs are only available to areas that are kind of high poverty to begin with.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jill is with us in Kimberly. Jill, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to tell us about, Jill?
Well, I want to speak as a kindergarten teacher and as a parent. I know that it's a lot easier to have free lunch for everybody. We have seen in the past that even some families that qualify for free and reduced lunches don't do the paperwork, or you know how life gets busy and you get behind things, and so they let their lunch account get behind or fall into the negatives. And it's embarrassing for students to like try to go through the lunch line and not be able to because they're so far negative. And as a parent, for me to not have to worry about topping up their lunch account was really nice. So I really appreciated that last year it was free and reduced. Nobody had to worry about it. Everybody got healthy food. It was just a lot easier and good for the kids.
And Jill, on the teacher side of your resume here, do you notice, you know, if kids are getting these meals, does it make it easier to teach them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just a lot easier if they aren't hungry, or with the free meals, they were also able to get breakfast last year. And that made a huge difference as well. We had more kids coming and getting breakfast and starting the day fed instead of hungry. So it was a huge benefit.
Jill, thanks for the call. Krista, your thoughts on Jill's experience?
Yeah, I think, Jill, you raise a whole bunch of really important points. And in addition to not filling out paperwork, I know, you know, when I was a child, I didn't bring my parents every piece of paper that was handed to me. But there's also kind of the eligibility only extends so far up the income distribution. So in order to be eligible for free meals, a single parent with two kids can't make more than about $30,000 a year. So that means a full-time, full-year worker earning $15 an hour isn't going to qualify for the free program. So there's a lot of families that are relatively low income but don't qualify on paper.
Jill, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Krista Ruffini from Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy, looking at universal availability of free meals for students, breakfast and lunch. Still time for your calls at 800-642-1234. Krista, people might say, okay, yeah, meals are good for kids, no doubt about it, but schools have a lot of financial needs. Is this the best way to do this, given that at least some of this is providing meals for students whose families can afford to feed them?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think you raise kind of two points here. So one is that schools have a lot of costs that they have to deal with. And we heard from Aaron's reporting earlier that in many cases, just making meals available to everyone without a cost actually was cost savings in some respects. They didn't need to monitor all that paperwork and go through those administrative hurdles. Now, at the end of the day, it's still going to cost the money. And so schools and districts across the state and across the country need to ask, are the costs associated with giving the higher income kids the free meals who might not need one, are those costs greater than the cost to the other kids who wouldn't be receiving a meal but could benefit? And so there's kind of different costs and benefits that we need to weigh when we're thinking about whether we should expand this program.
Thanks for the call. Go now to Heidi in Merton. Heidi, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Heidi?
Well, I kind of find it, I'm a teacher, a former parent, my kids are out of the house now, but I find it kind of two-sided here. Here they don't want to pay for the kids' lunches, and they, you know, don't want to continue this program, but yet they're willing to take money away from the public schools for those students that want to go to private schools, and they want to pay for that. To me, that seems like a double-edged sword.
Heidi, thanks for the call. Krista, what do you think?
I have done no research on school privatization, so I don't want to speak outside of my area of expertise, but I agree that there is a lot of movement in education policy kind of across the board.
Heidi, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Madison. Tom, hello. Are you there, Tom?
I've worked as an artist in residence in many different states, and I just see this as a no-brainer. I think when you get people who oppose it, like the people in Waukesha, they are people that are putting their political identity ahead of the children's welfare and general health. I think too many times these days, a conservative is somebody who stays awake all night thinking that, wow, somebody might be getting something they don't deserve.
Tom, thanks for the call. Chris, I'm guessing from what you just said, you don't want to go outside into the world of the politics of this. But what are you seeing when it comes to whether states are trying to step in and replace what the federal government had just done?
Yeah, and I think Tom brings up an important point in that this program and making it universal has a lot of support from a lot of people. And we've seen some states either introduce, Wisconsin being one of them, legislation to continue this program on a statewide basis. And others like Massachusetts, Vermont, California have already extended it statewide. And so we see universal programs tend to be popular. And there's good reason for that.
Thanks for the call. Heather joins us now in Madison. Heather, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Well, I'm a professional educator, and I was curious because if the students have participated in free breakfast programs, and there are free lunch or reduced programs as well. And there is a little bit of an increase in some of the churches in the local area communities providing like after school meals or other after school programs. But I do have a question. There is a kind of a national No Kid Hungry campaign that's been successful, both financially, but it's definitely in California. And as not just a contributor of the past, but talking with some other people in the state of California, most of those funds stay in the state of California just because of the size and the need. And as a person involved in different events or activities and professionals or as profession in the culinary industry as well, I've got to, is there an equivalent for the state of
Heather, I gotcha. We're just about out of time. Krista, briefly, have you seen this California thing? Are there equivalents to it elsewhere?
Yeah, I would say there's a wide array of community and local resources that really are very unique to each community and are really working very hard and doing great work to address the needs in where they're operating.
Heather, thanks for the call. And Krista, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I've been talking to Krista Ruffini, an assistant professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy. Krista joined us today to talk about the impact that the end of universal free school meals could have on learning and discipline in schools. A little while ago, we heard from Wisconsin Watch and reporting on this issue. They have a resource where people can text WISFood, WISFood, to 73224 to connect directly with a reporter who can answer food-related questions and help people find food resources.